We're preaching through the book of Revelation, but you've got to understand a lot more of God's book to be able to understand it. The day of the Lord and its final consummation is getting close. Everybody is looking at the Middle East today. I've said this before. Before I shifted into philosophy and education at Stanford University, I had considered seeking a Fulbright scholarship to study geopolitics in the Middle East, looking for an application at the American University at Beirut. I was mocked by one of my professors saying, if I were considering diplomatic service, stay out of an area that would no longer be the fulcrum of world balance of power as it had been. I wonder what that professor thinks today. Iraq and Iran are Persia of the Bible. Iraq and Iran are part of the old Grecian Empire that is prophesied by Daniel. Iraq and Iran are part of the old Medo-Persian Empire that are prophesied by Daniel. Iraq and a part of Iran are part of the old Babylonian Empire prophesied by Daniel. Iraq and the bare borders of Iran are part of the old Assyrian Empire that occupies so much of the prophecies of Isaiah that was God's instrument to chastise the 10 northern tribes of Israel called Samaria. Iraq and a bare portion of the borders of Iran, more strictly speaking, the northern two-thirds of Iraq, is the base out of which the old Assyrian kingdom burst from Nineveh, against which Jonah prophesied. Iraq and Iran is the kingdom that Habakkuk saw when he concerned and crying before God, asked why such a wicked people could be used to chastise God's people. Iraq and Syria represent, possibly with portions of Iran, the king of the north, reconstituted Seleucid kingdom of the old Grecian Empire, that in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel is going to be in recurring war with Egypt in the last days. And northern Iraq, Assyria, and Syria represent the area in Bible geography from which Antichrist will come. No wonder the world is paying attention to war in the Middle East today. No wonder the United States is so frustrated, forced to be an onlooker, held at bay by 52 hostages in Iran, unable to control the events at all. First time in history when war that can affect the whole world, particularly if the Straits of Hormuz are closed, they have no influence with either side. Iran hates us. Iraq is fighting with Russian-made war equipment, trained by Russian advisors, and it's to Moscow that the representatives of Iran and Iraq look, as Russia plays a more influential and capable of even more influential role than the United States can play, and as one of the young lions, offspring of those Mediterranean nations referred to in Ezekiel 38, all the United States can do is look on defensively and hope to be able to play a part as God controls the events and sets the stage for final history. You're going to have to understand the book of Daniel, and events make me hold off on the sun-clothed woman in the book of Revelation for just a moment. But I am going to look at the 11th chapter of Revelations. There was given me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and them that worship therein. Now I've heard this temple called everything, from the Church of God to a literal temple. And them that worship therein is everything from the saints to the Jews. Can't be all of them. But the court which is without the temple, leave out, and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. Put a 1 down, circle it in the margin right there, and let's start really paying attention to that 42 months designation. Because the Bible writes history in advance, and God's Word will relax some of us today as it puts the boundaries on what has to happen in the Middle East. I will give power unto my 2 witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. Put a 2 down, circle it there. This is a parenthetical passage between the 6 seals and the 7th seal is an interlude, an intermission. Between the 6 trumpets and the 7th trumpet is an intermission in God's book. And between the 6th vial and the 7th vial is an intermission. The great tribulation period, the time of the end, God describes as happenings occurring as Jesus, the Lamb, unleashes 7 seals, unleashes 7 angels to blow 7 trumpets, unleashes 7 angels to pour out 7 vials. In between each of those 7s are these interludes between the 6th and the 7th, and we're in the middle of one of those. I will give power unto my 2 witnesses. And the interlude is not an interlude of time. Time's marching on. It's an interlude of description where the focus is changed to another subject. I'll give power unto my 2 witnesses. They shall prophesy 1,260 days. What's 1,260 days? Isn't that 42 months? Huh? 1,260 days is 1,220 days, isn't it? 360 days? What's 42 months? What's 36 months? 3 years? Huh? 3 years and 2 months. 42 months is another 6 months on top of the 36, right? That's 3.5 years. What's 1,260 days? Remember, the Jewish year, not quite the same as ours, but that's going to come out, figuring 30-day months, how much does that come out to? Isn't that 3.5 years? These are the 2 olive trees and the 2 candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. And if any man will hurt them, boy, these last 2 witnesses ain't into turning the other cheek very much, are they? The Greek has it, if any man will think to hurt them, even to think about hurting them. Fire proceeds out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies. What if old Duke Majan might try to examine them? If any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. Oh, merciful God. These have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them to blood, and to smite the earth with all plagues, as often as they will. Well, just turn it loose. And when they shall have finished their testimony, and I've heard some people say, God's such a good God, He'll never hurt anybody. These are God's witnesses. But the name witness means martyr. They're called my two martyrs. But before they are martyred, they'll have this power to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them. Now, who's this beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit? 13th chapter. 17th chapter. Those are the chapters that tell of Antichrist rising in his final kingdom. The word beast, as we have already taught, and I can just say it today, has a threefold reference. And you've got to identify which reference is the focus when you talk about the beast. The beast is a person on this earth. Revelation 19 will talk about the beast was taken, the false prophet with him. There they're talking about the final personage of an earthly ruler, Antichrist. He'll rise out of obscurity. He'll be more stout, which is sort of a mild King James expression. Translating Daniel, he'll be more stout than his fellows. He will have a kingdom that is given to him by the remainder kings of a reconstituted Roman Empire, 10 kings who in the days of their ruling, the end will come, out of 20-some present areas called nations that were conquered in a part of the old Roman Empire. 10 of them will come together like iron and clay in the last days. No necessity that the current common market be it. The Roman Empire touched nations in Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and Europe. Somewhere out of the 20-some present nations, maybe more before the end comes, 10 will cling together like iron and clay. Out of those 10, a little horn will rise up, uproot 3, and take power in the Middle Eastern area. The other kings will give to him leadership. He will make a covenant of 7 years with the Jews. And out of that covenant will come a temporary peace for God's people in Israel. They'll rebuild a temple. There are 5 temples in Jerusalem. The first one Solomon built. The second one, Zerubbabel. Zedekiah was around when Solomon's was destroyed. Zerubbabel and Joshua build, in the book of Ezra, the second temple. The third temple, that one, by the way, is destroyed. The third temple is built by Herod after one of the followers of Seleucid successors to his portion of the Grecian kingdom, destroys it and offers sacrifices to Jupiter. And a lot of Bible scholars think he was Antichrist. He destroyed the third temple, or the second temple. The third temple was built by Herod after Antiochus destroyed the second one, built by those that are described building it in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah, where we've spent so much time. The fourth temple will be built during the early days of the seven-year period we call the tribulation. It'll be built under the covenant that Antichrist makes with the Jews. That fourth temple will be destroyed. So you got the first one with Solomon, the second one under Ezra's book, Zerubbabel and Joshua. The third one built by Herod. That's the one Jesus worshipped in. The fourth one will be built during the tribulation, during the first half of it. Then Antichrist is going to break the covenant, reveal his true colors, and rise up to blaspheme that temple. Then a fifth temple that we preached about when we were preaching in the book of Ezekiel, that'll be built during the millennium by the Jews. That great temple from which the water of life will flow out, cleansing the Dead Sea. The one that Ezekiel talks about beginning in the 40th chapter of his prophecies. The fifth and final temple where the Jews will worship and people all over the earth will come to worship during the great millennium. Understand, this earthly ruler will have a kingdom, Antichrist kingdom, Antichrist personal ruler, but he is empowered by an evil spirit, a demon spirit, a beast that the 17th chapter of Revelation says was and is not. That means he was operating on this earth. He was the prince of Grecia, that the angel that came to Daniel after he describes having fought the prince of Persia to get to him to answer a prayer for 21 days, and he left Michael in a holding action. He says, I'm going to go back now and fight with the prince of Persia, and when I leave after that battle, lo, the prince of Grecia comes. The evil demon force. The kind of principality that the book of Ephesians talks about when it says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and rulers of darkness in high places. The agents of the prince of the power of the air that rule behind earthly rulers and like a puppeteer hold the reins allowed by God, their domain to rule earthly rulers. This one was. He gave power to Alexander the Great. He ruled the ancient Grecian kingdom. But he is not. The plan of God, he was sealed up and put away. Where, we don't know, just somewhere in the bottomless pit, wherever that is. There's only one word in the Greek, abyss. I don't know where that is. He was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. They that dwell on the earth shall wonder. That's the beast we're talking about. That's the beast that has ascended out of the bottomless pit, back to the 11th chapter, verse 7. When these two witnesses have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit, or the abyss, shall make war against them, and shall overcome them, and kill them. And their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city. Well, and the reason I say, if the Bible talks in symbol, it's clear, it's symbol. The rest of the time, if it isn't symbol, the Bible wants you to pay attention and believe it means what it says. Here they make it clear, it's symbol. This is why these two witnesses cannot be the church. The Bible is putting its own interpretive principle in. These dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom because of its sin, and Egypt because of its worldliness, where also our Lord was crucified. He was crucified outside the gates of Jerusalem. That settles it. They're going to lay in the streets of Jerusalem, the day of the people, and kindreds, and tongues, and nations shall see their dead bodies 3 days and a half, until satellites were shot off in space. This prophecy could not have been fulfilled. Now, the world will look on. These two witnesses that have terrified them, they'll see their dead bodies 3 days and a half, and they've come to hate them so much. You ever seen anything in your life stir the world up like a bunch of preachers getting together and trying to bring some morality into this nation again? I mean, nobody ever quarreled with the church getting involved in liberal causes. Nobody ever got upset about the church being selected to go and church men being selected to go and talk to Khomeini. But when a church and its preachers start getting together to tell the world they got to do something about the way they live, I have never seen an act by churchmen get national attention as quickly as the moral majority. If I didn't believe that Jerry Falwell was right, the way the world's reacting to him would convince me. I mean, it's very clear. He's made the spirit of Antichrist mad. That's pretty good credentials for me. The people hate these prophets so much they shall not suffer their dead bodies to be put in graves. Now you'd think that they'd read the Bible enough that when a couple like that come along, they'd bury him just to make the Bible wrong. But they're so blind and obsessed with their own will, they're going to leave them there and show them off. They that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry and shall send gifts one to another. You say, how can civilized people do this? Same way I've shown you, civilized people have learned to bow down to Baal. And they sing in his image every Christmas and sing in Christmas trees. Listen, the Roman Catholic Church leaders had a feast and rejoiced after they burned the preacher John Huss at the stake. You take the church out of this world, man can get pretty mean. I just read the most harrowing story I've ever read. And it's history. The history of I.G. Farben, the most powerful industrial and economic combine that Germany ever produced. And covered up patents and agreements with none other than Standard Oil of New Jersey, who produced the synthetic nitrates that set First World War Germany free from dependence upon Chile, after they got their heads knocked trying to take the Falkland Islands so they could protect the source and make gunpowder, that makes a joke of the current oil crisis. Because Farben produced synthetic gasoline from coal that made Hitler totally self-dependent and needing no oil. that produced in the Buna Project synthetic rubber, again in its chemical agreements with Standard Oil of New Jersey, controlling that production. That hid its millions in holding corporations and held the Justice Department of the United States at bay. That bribed the Attorney General of the United States. Yeah, that happens. $50,000 to start with. Who himself then leaned on the Constitution and took the Fifth Amendment to get around prosecution. Intelligent industrial leaders of the world who created the poison gases, who took over the slave camp in Poland to provide its own slave labor to its industries. And by the way, has made its full turn now. And in spite of the fact of the Rockefellers' role in Standard Oil of New Jersey and the attempts to break any possible linkage with those patents and money, its spinoffs and its personalities and its brains, and in spite of the 7 to 10 and 4 to 7 year sentences of their leading scientists at Nuremberg, survived and had the point of making, had a party with SS generals on the very site of the slave camp, the fourth one they built, while the Jews by the millions could live off of their own body fat for 3 months, rising at 3 a.m., sun or shine or snow, and run at a trot the 4 miles to work as slave laborers in this industrial giant's camp, to produce the synthetic instruments of war. And as they would run through the gates, SS troopers would look at them, and the ones that looked too weak to work were selected for instant annihilation in the gas chambers. While leading industrialists, handshakers with presidents, write one another, as I read the copies of the letters, saying, we reached an alcoholic gay that night because we had achieved a production schedule. Don't tell me an intelligent world with a church gone cannot laugh over such a scene as this, as they keep the bodies there and they make merry.
This is the end of Side 1. For the rest of the message, please turn tape over to Side 2. Thank you.